Good morning, church family. That was the end of the song. I wasn't ready for it. Can you tell? Well, it occurred to me during that last song, which leads into my first announcement, I thought, I don't know if Annette told Christy that during the last song, when you hear the song, go ahead and release the Kraken, let the kids out. And Christy was like, oh, yes, thank you. And then I hear Rochelle behind me like, I don't know what's going on. I guess church is over, whatever she said. I'm glad that, thank you for laughing. It landed on like one person. Anyway, so yeah, so just a reminder at the end of our time together that your kiddos will get released, and then that gives our kids' house workers a couple minutes to clean up before we go packing chairs up in there at the end. So, it's Advent, week two. Thanks for being here. One of the things that was on my mind this week in preparation for this morning was when we come to Advent, I think there's a danger. It's that danger, I think, of over-familiarity. Advent is something I grew up with, even though I wasn't raised in a Christian home. We went to church because it was West Michigan, and it's the thing you were supposed to do. And we lit the candles and sang the songs. And I think what can happen is Advent can kind of go into this category of nostalgia. But if we were to leave here last week, this week, next week, with just a nostalgic feeling, like if we leave here and we feel a little bit warm and cozy inside for a minute, that's not a win for me, and I don't think it's a win for us, because I think that there's something so much more powerful about the Advent season. It's a little like how God gave Sabbath in the Old Testament, like to the Israelites, he gave this law, this decree of 6 days of work and a day of rest, and it was for our benefit, because there's something about human nature. We tend to get caught up, I tend to get it caught up in my own drama, my own life, my own busyness, my finances, my commitments, my kids, the mortgage, the bill, cleaning the rim of the toilet, washing the kitchen, getting the fuzzies off the, you know, the little condenser on the fridge so the fridge doesn't burn out, and making sure that the oil gets changed in the car and the grass gets cut and that I'm going to work and that everybody's doing what they're supposed to be doing. And I don't know about you, but that on switch can get stuck on. And I think Sabbath was a gift. Sabbath was God's way of, you know, I've always kind of likened it to the SAT. That whether you're finished or not, time, like pencils down, hands up. God's like a day of rest. I think Advent is supposed to have that same effect on us, because I don't know about you, but for me, when I just stay in on mode, something starts to erode in me over time mentally. I get more stressed, anxious, I get a little more edgy, less patient with people. Eventually I start to get, you know, that low-grade depression where you just kind of lose interest in some things, and then it's just easier to take less care of your body because, you know what, you know, I just don't have the strength to say no to tortilla chips tonight, or brownies, or whatever it is for you, or another drink, or whatever, right? And so it kind of erodes at us mentally and emotionally, which then leads to eroding at us physically. And so there's something about Advent that I think is very much like Sabbath. It's like there's this gift here. And even though if we looked at last week, Advent isn't necessarily a biblical idea. It's not something Jesus talked about. It's something that the early church felt like was important, that Jesus' birth was more than just a day, that it was a season. And we looked last week that this word Advent, it means preparation for arrival. So if you're pregnant, hopefully you didn't wait to get stuff until you were driving to the hospital. You started preparing 9 months ago. You started painting the nursery. You started getting new furniture. You started paying attention. Do we have lead-based paint in this house? It's an old house. You started registering. You started having baby showers. You started getting diapers and dishes and baby food and reading what to expect when you're expecting, right? That's the idea of Advent, is like, hey, get ready now. And it's not just get ready for Christmas, it's get ready for Christ. Right? Like anybody, I tell couples in marriage counseling, you can get ready for the wedding, but are we getting ready for the marriage, right? For the life together. And I think that's what Advent is supposed to be. It's not just preparations for Christmas. We all do that. We prepare for Christmas. We're already buying the food and the snacks and the gifts, and we're decorating the house and the tree so that when guests come over or you go to their house, right, they're prepared to receive you. But we're not just talking about an event. We're talking about a life and a life with Jesus. And there's this gift that I think does something for us. There's this gift of grace in Advent that does something for us spiritually, this soul care that relates to mental care, mental health, emotional health, physical health. It's like a season that is supposed to be a reset button. So I don't want us to leave here during this series and just feel nostalgic, like, oh, that was warm. I heard the Christ story again. Like, that's important. I'm into warmth, right? But that fire has to burn deeper. I think it has to burn into life change, into a decision we make that when we leave, you're like, oh, that's what Christmas meant. That's what Christ came for. And so last week, of course, we looked at our spiritual attention deficit disorder because we get distracted. And I get distracted. I get distracted with my busyness, with me, with my idols. And we said last week that whatever gets your attention gets your affection. And we have control over what gets our attention and how much of our attention it gets or they get. We get to control that. Today we're going to go to the next step of the Christmas story. And I just want to leave us with one word this morning. One word. If you were listening to Darcy's reading this morning, thank you, sister, for reading. If you read the quote from Mark Driscoll on the front of your bulletin or picked up on it with the first two songs, you already know what this one word is. I'll go to this quote by Mark Driscoll. Everything may not be okay, but if God is with you, you will be okay. One word. They will call him Emmanuel, which means God with us. With. That's a word that changes everything. I'm an 80s kid, so I still remember back before there was WWJD, all the Christian kids that I knew, their parents had those vanity license plates on the front of their car. It said, God is my, anybody got it? Co-pilot. Right? And then like late 80s, early 90s, some people were like, that's bad theology. And then they had bumper stickers that said, if God is your co-pilot, anybody? Switch places, switch seats. Yeah. So before there was Make America Great Again and WWJD and other things that Christians say that, anyway, we're going to leave that one alone. Too late. God is my co-pilot, right? But this idea that God is with me, that you're not alone, that even in those moments where we feel the most alone, that there's this reminder in Advent every year, God is with you. And it's not always going to feel, and I think that this is the thing that I lost sight of when I was a new Christian for a lot of years. There were so many times in my life, I don't feel God with me. I feel all alone. And I think that's part of living in a broken world. I'm not going to feel God with me, but I have to remind myself, just like there's other things in our life that we have to remind ourselves of, right? Like you get in stressful situations or you have to, you know, talk to your spouse about something like, hey, finances aren't good right now. And you get it built up in your mind that they're going to have a certain reaction. And then you tell your spouse or you do this thing and you're like, oh, and they respond very favorably, like, okay, you know, hey, we're going to work through this. And you're like, oh, I thought you were going to be mad at me, right? And it was all in our mind. It's kind of one of those kind of reminders. Like, I have to remind myself I got this. I got to remind myself that I've done this before. I've got to remind myself that we've been in this spot before. I've got to remind myself. And that's really what this is about, is I got to remind myself that God is with me. He's with me in a group. He's with me in a crowd. He's with me when I'm alone. He's with me when I'm driving. He's with me. And it's more than just a passive with me. God is with. In fact, this is what I love about this word that that Matthew uses here when he says that they will call him Emmanuel, God with us. And so he uses this really powerful word with that is kind of like a two-pronged word. It's a compound word. It has two different meanings. And here's where this gets so stinking cool is the word with. The first one is kind of like a homecoming. It's this, we're with each other again. It's dad or mom or dad, they were deployed overseas with the military, and they've been gone for 6 months, 8 months, 3 years. You haven't seen them. You've been apart, and then they come home in your with. Once again, you're with. It's the word that they would have used in that culture. If you went somewhere, like if we go to the hospital, for example, and mom gives birth, and all of a sudden there's this new child, and then you bring that child home, and the family is with each other again. They're with the new baby, and mom and dad are with one another again. So there's that withness that we were orphaned, that because of our sinfulness, that we were separate from God, and because of Jesus, we are with the Father again. We're kind of, there's this reuniting. But then here's where it gets even cooler, this word with that Matthew uses here. It's like teamwork. It's two things, the word in its original language, it means two things that are meant to go together. They're two separate things, but they work together as one. So take, for example, your car. Your car has an engine, and it has a transmission. Those are two completely different things. The engine has all the power. The transmission, you guys remember in the 80s, you had that big hump in going down the middle of the car? Like most cars now are front-wheel drive, but that transmission would transmit all of that energy and power from the engine to the wheels, so the car can go, go, go. Those two things are a team. An engine without a transmission is just powerful, but a transmission without an engine doesn't do anything, right? That's the with. That's the teamwork. It's the steering wheel and the wheels, right? There's a with. They work together. They each have their own function, but they're tied together. They're connected together. And when I read that, I was like, what a cool picture. And maybe it's because I'm a man, right? Like maybe I should have picked something else. I don't know. But there's something about that, like that picture of teamwork, like the two of them, you got to have both of them together and they work together. And it's so powerful. And that's the witness, is that we, like the transmission, we're subservient to the Father. He's in control. He has the power. He gives the orders. And we are the transmission. We translate that love, that grace, that truth that sets us free to the world around us, to our lives, to our kids, to our spouses, to our coworkers. Like we're just kind of this conduit transmitting the power of God into this broken world. And so I want us to go together this morning to Luke chapter 10. Luke chapter 10, and it occurred to me right now in this moment that I left my phone plugged into the soundboard with which I was going to read Luke chapter 10. So I'm just going to mosey. Such a professional church we have. We do professional with a small p. I'm going to grab one of these Bibles. If you've never noticed it, we have free Bibles when you walk in. If you need a Bible, want a Bible, or you just forgot yours today, you can grab one. That is our gift from the fine people here at New Vintage Church to you. So I'm going to turn with y'all to Luke chapter 10. And we're going to meet these two sisters. Some of us have been in church world for a while, for a minute. We've met these sisters before. It's Mary and Martha. Mary and Martha, just to kind of drop us into the story here for a minute, very relatable to us. Mary and Martha are these two sisters that kind of took care of Jesus during his ministry. I used to have, when I was at Blythefield Baptist, and I would go on youth trips, I'd speak at these youth trips. I'd be gone for a few days, a weekend, a week, whatever. And there were two ladies that would also be on these youth trips, Amy DeGarmo, Joni Kuipers. And they knew that typically before I spoke, for example, if I was supposed to speak at 7 o'clock at night, I didn't like to eat dinner beforehand. So all the students would be eating pizza at 5. I didn't want to be up there with my blood sugar all like, yeah, I don't feel like talking. And so I would just kind of separate myself quietly and go have some prayer time before getting ready to go speak. And what was so cool about Joni and Amy is they always made sure that there was a plate of food left for me. And usually they were the ones putting out a pot of coffee for me late at night. It was like just their little way of serving me. Like, hey, we're going to make sure that Murph is taken care of. This is a little picture of what Mary and Martha are to Jesus. Like, hey, we're going to make sure you're fed. We're going to make sure that your students are fed. When you're coming through town, you can stay here. They were kind of in love with Jesus. So as we read this story, what happens is Jesus is coming through town, and they're going to stop at the home of Mary and Martha. And you know what it's like. It's the holidays, and you're about to have 12, 13, 14 people over, and there's a lot of preparations to do. That's the story we step into. And so Luke chapter 10, starting here in verse 38. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me out. Verse 41, Martha, Martha, the Lord answered, you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed, only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken from her. Can you feel what's happening in the story? I don't know about you, but I've been there as Martha. Hey, is anybody going to help? Hey, I'll do it. Oh, no, you guys just keep sitting. I'll get it. Hey, does anybody notice? Can you hear Martha's abandonment? She feels invisible. She doesn't feel seen. She doesn't feel heard. Hey, does anybody know that we're drowning over here? Does anybody know that we have a need? Does anybody see? God, are you even paying attention? Hello? Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door. That's what's happening with Martha right now. She's frustrated. She's crying out for help. And then she's like, hey, Lord, would you fix my sister? Because she's not getting it. She's alone. She's alone. She's all alone doing all the work. Isn't it interesting? And this is why I say that Advent is so, it's life-giving when we really absorb these words like with. Do you see what happens when we feel invisible? When we feel like we're alone and we have to do it all, like we're just going to shoulder the burden? First of all, we get snappy with others. Right? This is what Martha's doing. We can all relate to Martha. I'll get it. No, that's fine. You just keep sitting. We feel like nobody's helping. And we feel like nobody cares. We feel unloved. I mean, this is what Martha says. Lord, don't you care? You ever been in that spot? Lord, do you even care? I'm drowning here. Hello? Like, what do I got to do to get your attention? I might get in trouble for saying this, but I'm kind of used to visiting that area. But in my experience, moms are the worst at this. In other words, this is, by and large, I think moms, this is your tap out because you're so good at nurturing. Most of you. my moms are. Right? You want everyone to feel welcome. And you drive yourself into perfection, into the ground. You're so busy making sure that every detail is right. And you're just out there just like a busy little bee in the kitchen. And you mean well, but ultimately your family doesn't care if every candle is lit and every spice is just right. They want to be with you, Mom. Now, before I let the dads off the hook, dads, we do it as well. Not just picking on the moms here. We do it, we tend to do it outside of the home more often than not. We tend to do it like, well, yes, I love you. I go to work and I bring home money and then I make sure the lawn is mowed and I make sure there's oil, the oil's changed and that the furnace filter is changed and you know, whatever, in the maintenance, and if the roof is caving in, I'm usually the one, you know, calling the guy. Like, we tend to do it outside the home, whereas moms tend to do it inside the home. I'm not saying that's true across the board. Please don't write me an email in crayon this week telling me that I'm a sexist. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying by observation, by and large, that's been my observation, is we both do this, moms and dads. We become Martha. And then we're like, man, does anybody even notice that I'm doing all this work? And she's thinking the same thing. He's thinking, you know, whatever, and it just becomes this cycle. It's Jesus' response that we should laser in. So we find ourselves in the story. Yeah, that's me. I'm probably more Martha than Mary. And what's Jesus' response? Because I think what I want is I want Jesus' response to be one of correction. I want Jesus to go correct the people around me. I want what Martha wanted. Jesus, would you correct my sister? Would you change my sister's behavior so that she will lend a hand? Hey, will you change my spouse? Will you change my kids? Will you change my adult parents? Will you change my in-laws? Will you change them? And instead of Mary getting corrected, which is what Martha wanted, she gets commended. Oh, Martha. Martha, Martha, Martha. I love that Jesus says her name twice, because anytime you see somebody's name said twice in Scripture, like if it's said once, it's just, here's a name, it's a historical fact. When you see a name mentioned twice, the writer is trying to communicate something. There's power, there's connection, there's compassion. Jesus on the cross, Lord, Lord, why have you forsaken me? Not just Lord, Lord, Lord. When God speaks to Moses, 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 right? There's connection and compassion. And then if you see it three, that's usually reserved for God alone. Holy, holy, holy is the Lord God. And so Jesus uses her name twice, and I don't want us to miss that little detail because something's happening there in that culture. Martha, Martha, you are worried. And Scripture says, distracted by so many details. But he says, only one thing is necessary. And your sister has chosen that one thing. I love that the word Jesus uses here, distracted. You're distracted. You're distracted. You have spiritual attention deficit. You're distracted by all the details. And this word distracted, it means divided. I'd like to be in there. I'd like to be sitting with Jesus, listening to Jesus, but I have all these things I need to do. I wish I could spend time doing this, but I have to do this. And the truth is, there just isn't time to do everything. There just isn't time to do everything. There isn't going to be time in this life, on this planet, to do all the things you want to do. Somewhere in the back of our brain, we all know this, but we prioritize horribly. I tend to prioritize horribly. And I think what Jesus is saying here is like, he gets it. Yeah, there's plans that have to be made, sure. And there's a meal that has to be cooked, absolutely. But the priority that you're putting it on and the amount of attention that is causing your affection to go this way, right? Like, we got to change the knobs up. A little less of this, a little more of this. A little less this, a little more of this. A little less of this, a little more of this. Or to put it in more black and white terms that we say around here all the time, one yes might mean 1,000 no's. If I'm going to say yes to this, I might have to say no to 100 other things. If I'm going to say yes to having a child, right? We're going to say yes to having a child. We're going to have to say no to all these other things. And you've seen parents, because you judge them, right? That are trying to like be parents and still trying to be cool. And it just isn't working out. I'm not saying you have to be totally not cool. I'm just saying sometimes you're like, you know, I'm going to have to put more energy, more time, attention, money over here. And I'm going to have to dial back over here, because one yes is going to mean 100 no. It's too easy to sacrifice the best and settle for good. What's good enough? It's good enough. I don't know how many times in counseling over the years I've talked to couples, and some of the stuff that's going on deeper inside is just bad rhythms, bad connections, bad witness. Here's what I mean by this. One of the things that comes up often in conversations is, and I'll say to couples, whatever you do after 6 o'clock at night, now I'm talking about traditional first shifters here, so adjust it for your circumstances if you're not a first shifter. But what you do after dinner is either going to put a deposit into tomorrow or a withdrawal. If you want to stay up and binge watch Breaking Bad for the third time, and you stay up until 2 o'clock in the morning, because, man, there's time on the clock, I got to do it all. I'm not judging you. Just understand you are making a withdrawal from tomorrow. You're going to get to work. You're not going to be at your best. You're not going to be at your best with your wife, your husband, your kids, your job. Or you can make a deposit. You know what? From dinner time on, what's going to help me wind down? What's going to help me rest? What's going to help me get into bed and go, whew. Like, because we're going to go work, 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 work. Okay, lights out. And then we wonder why our body isn't like, oh, yeah, I'm not falling asleep yet. I'm still thinking about this, and I'm thinking about the show, and I'm thinking about what it's doing, right? We don't have, like, there's not a, whatever we do the night before is either going to make a deposit into the next day or a withdrawal. We can't say yes to everything. We can't just keep going and going and going and doing and doing and doing. And Jesus is looking at Martha with compassion, and he says, your sister, she's chosen to do less. And then he goes on to say, in fact, she's really just chosen to do this one thing. And what is that one thing that we read? Sit and listen. She's chosen to sit and listen. To sit and have a conversation. To shut off work. And we're going to be with. Mary chose with. One of the best examples I ever saw of this was this Asian grandma that I met like 25 some years ago. She's the owner of this little Thai restaurant out on 28th Street in Cascade. I was there with a couple of friends. We were having some Thai food. And like typical Americans, we ate. And as the woman was walking by, I asked her if I could get a to-go box. I had no idea the offense that I had just walked into. And this woman, and I thought she was joking at first, and I would learn she was not joking. She turned to me and she said, oh no, I don't get you to-go box. You American, you eat, you run. That's all you do, you eat and you run. No, you sit, you gossip, you talk, you stay, finish food. And she walked away. It's awesome. She didn't bring me a box. She's like, screw you. You're going to sit here. You're going to enjoy each other. You're going to slow down. I'm not bringing you a box. You can leave the food if you want. And I was like, okay. Right. You ever been in one of those, like where like an 80-year-old woman says something? You're like, yep, I'm going to do that. Because I don't want you to put me over your knee. Like, I think I'm in trouble. I'm going to get grounded. Like, it was that level of confidence she spoke with. No, you be with each other. That's what she was saying. You guys, you eat and you run. You're so busy. And she injected a little bit of aggressive Asian culture into my life that would take 15 years to actually take, but it got there. Or I should say it's getting there. You've heard us talk about our friends, the Kuipers. And to me, they are a perfect example. Mark and Joni Kuipers. When they invite you to their home, there's usually a good bottle of bourbon on the counter, a charcuterie board, some quiet jazz. Joni likes jazz. She knows I like jazz. I'm like, this is great. And the four of us just sit and listen to one another. There's no TV on. There's no distractions. And we usually lose track of time. That's withness. In fact, I titled this message, because I title him in my head, even though you never see him usually, Can I Get a Withness? get it? These are the things that entertain me during the week. It's like dad humor and pastor humor just had a baby, and it's just the worst thing ever. But let's get serious about this before we land the plane for a minute. If you've been here for a while, you've heard me over the years quote Dr. Larry Crabb. If you don't know who Dr. Crabb is, this guy, I mean, he's written like 14 best-selling books. He just passed away a couple of years ago. And he's been a therapist and a counselor his whole life. I kind of joke that he's just written one book. He just keeps rewriting it. He has the same theme over and over and over. Just each time he writes the book, it's like the last theme, but it evolves. And he wrote a book called Connecting years ago. And here's the statement that has always stuck with me. This is a guy that had been up to this point doing counseling for 25 years, seeing married couples at their worst, seeing individuals at their worst, and helping them get back to their best, or helping them get back to a better version of themselves, helping them reconnect with God and others. And he distills all those 25 years into this statement. He said, it's my belief that the root cause of almost all of our mental and emotional problems, get this, the root cause of almost all of our mental and emotional problems is a lack of togetherness. Wow. And we should soak in that for a minute. This is a guy that's been doing it for a minute, and he says, you know, here's what I've observed. We don't do with very well. We were made for with. God himself is a with. Father, Son, Holy Spirit. He's a family within himself. All of creation was created with that blueprint because everything in creation tells a story about God. In Genesis 1, in the origin story that God creates Adam, he says, that's not good. Why? Because it doesn't tell a story about himself. Because God is not alone. He is with. Mankind needed withness, togetherness. And when we don't experience withness, something gets broken. It's like unplugging a toaster from the wall. It just doesn't seem to work right. It's like removing a transmission from an engine. It's not doing much. It's not really getting anywhere. It's kind of useless. But man, you reconnect it. You put the transmission and the engine together. You put you and the Father together. Something starts to happen. A fire starts to build. This last thing that I'm going to close with, I really do think I'm going to ask a question. And this question, I think, could be the key that would unlock your potential. Could really be the key to unlock who God created you to be and what God created you to do. And the question is this. So God is with you. He is with you when you are good, and he is with you when you are bad. God is with me when I'm doing right, and God is with me when I'm doing wrong. Or as I like to call it, driving. Anybody knows me knows I am a Christian at home. I am a Christian at work. I am a Christian on the street. And I am a Darwinist behind the wheel. It is survival of the fittest. And if you are one of these people that drives the speed limit in the far left lane, thank you for nodding your head, Nick. Like one TikToker said, you need to understand the left lane is for crime. That's my lane. Get out of it. So here's the question. God is with you and me when we're doing good. God is with you and me because of Jesus when we're doing bad, when we're doing right, when we're doing wrong, when we are happy, when we are angry. God is with us. But here's the question that could unlock our human potential. When are you with God? That's the key. When are you with God? He's with you, but when are you with him? I mean, Jesus tells this story about prayer, and he says, when you pray, go into your room, close the door, and pray to your Father who is in secret. It seems so clear that Jesus, like, there's a when and there's a where. I think it literally has to be in your room. I don't think that's the spirit of what he was saying. He's saying, I want you to go somewhere, close the door, block out distractions, right? Silence the cell phone, turn off the screens, get away from people, go somewhere, whether it's in your house, in your backyard, if you need to drive somewhere. But there's a when and there's a where. There's a time that's set aside, like this is my date night with God. This is my date morning, with this is my coffee with Jesus. Whatever it is, and this is the question you and I think this Advent have to wrestle with. I think it's the question that Martha had to wrestle with. At what point do you go pencils down, hands up? At what point do you go, you know what? It's good enough. It doesn't need to be perfect. But if I'm going to say yes to Jesus, I'm going to say no to perfectionism. If I'm going to say yes to relationships, I'm going to have to say no to some other commitments. If I'm going to say yes to my family, you might have to say no to having a good housekeeping looking home. There might have to be a little dust on the counter and cat fur in the carpet. But it's because you're saying yes to what Jesus said is more important. So there's my challenge and there's my question for you, church family. And it's a challenge and it's a question for me. Let's be clear. I don't get up here on Sundays because I'm on top of the mountain talking to you guys in the valley. We're like marathon runners doing this together. We're just sharing running tips, right? We're just sharing stuff we're learning along the way. It's what runners do. Hey, you should try these insoles. You should try these gel blocks. You should try these hydration pack. You should, right? You're just learning stuff as you go. I'm just learning stuff as I go, and I get a chance to share it with you guys. God is with you and me. When and where? I really want you to answer that question before next Sunday. Figure out your when and your where. Michelle, Rowan, if you want to come close us. Whatever gets your attention gets your affection. So like we sing every year at the holiday season, let every heart prepare him room. That's what this morning is about. It's not that we don't believe in God, we just don't have room for him. It's not that we don't believe in God, we don't have time. We don't have room. And then we wonder why we're like, Jesus, do you even care? Do you see that I'm all alone? He's like, I do. I want you to come be with me. We're going to receive our offering. And before we do, I just want to say two quick things. First of all, thank you, because your continued generosity allows us to keep being church. And there are bills and expenses that we have on a weekly basis. And obviously some of that, I get the conflict of interest, is that I do get a paycheck. So that is part of it. And that is biblical and right. And if you have an issue with that, you can come talk to me later. But I want to say something on top of that I think is more important even than that. And that is, as we get to the end of the year, a lot of people consider end of the year giving. Whether they're feeling generous because it's the holidays, or they're like, man, tax time is coming and the deadline is the 31st. I don't care what your motive is. What I do care is that we believe God is building something here at New Vintage, and it's growing. And of course, we don't plan to stay in this space forever. And so our leadership team is praying about a building. We've been asking the Lord to give us a building, but we will have expenses as we grow. And so I just want you to consider that if you consider this home, and if end of the year giving, and I'm not trying to guilt you into giving a gift if that's not what God's put in your heart, but if he has, certainly over the next couple of weeks, we can certainly put that to good use as we continue to kind of rebuild our infrastructure and build the structure of this little church family. So thank you so much, you guys. I appreciate you guys. I love doing church with all of us together. It's like the big breakfast club every Sunday morning. So you guys stand up, and I'm going to shut up and turn it over to these fine two.